Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
All right. Yeah. See, that's so amazing. That speaker's incredible. When we first released Sirenscape, our devices weren't really loud enough. Hello, over there.
Hi.
Hello. So I have a plan for today.
You have a plan?
I do. So here's the notes.
Okay.
So first of all, I thought we should just introduce ourselves. I am Ben Looms.
Yeah.
I wrote the Sirenscape thing. I'm a Dice Stormer. So I have a group on YouTube who plays on video and broadcasts it, and people watch that for some reason, which is hilarious. Pathfinder is my favorite game, like by a million miles. I came to Pathfinder via the Redbox and 3.5. I play Call of Cthulhu. I'm an opera singer and composer, amateur programmer.
Yeah, I'm Jessica Price. I am the project manager at Paizo.
My name is Cosmo Isley. I am a sales associate at Paizo, and I play a lot of Pathfinder.
We're here. Master of the clowns.
I have been known to utilize a clown from time to time.
What I want to know is, just first, who knows what Sirenscape is? Everyone's cool, so we don't need to make this into an explanation of Sirenscape. Fantastic, good. What I want to know is what you want to know about in this session. So the options basically are, and I'll get you to raise hands in a minute. I've got a little thing we can go through. We did promise immersion tools, as in talking about ways of doing maps, minis, lighting, handouts, and even smells. We can focus on that. We can also do a kind of a talk like we did last year about, who was here last year? No one. Okay, so we're free to repeat ourselves.
Yes.
We can also talk about the role of movies and emotion and our emotional contour, our light motifs, all sorts of musical techniques and sound techniques for evoking reactions. And we could also just make this a Sirenscape Q&A if that's actually what you just came for. So raise hands for who's interested in talking about general immersion things with maps and minis and lighting and smells. Okay, so we'll do that first up. That sounds fantastic. Who's interested in a kind of a theoretical musical discussion about uses of harmony and chords and color and motifs and things like that? So a bit of interest, okay, good. And who'd like to have a sort of a Sirenscape Q&A in there, or history of Sirenscape, or the functioning of elements and things? Okay, cool, so sort of a bit more. Okay, so we'll do mainly immersion tools, which I can talk through. So I've got some notes, and what I thought is that I'd talk through my notes initially, and then you can both talk around each of the topics if what occurs to you once you hear what I say. Fantastic. Awesome. So I'm an actor, a stage opera singer, sort of lover of movies and everything like that. So for me, immersion has always been a really, really big thing from the first times I ever played role-playing games. And so I've done a lot of thinking about the ways you can do these things and what can be effective and what can be cheap and what can be inexpensive as well. So I've actually gone through and thought about each kind of thing, the cheap way of doing it and the really, really expensive way that's really, really effective. So number one, maps. From my perspective, I don't understand why I still see so many people taking a blank grid and drawing on it with Sharpies. It blows my mind when there's so many extra tools and incredible ways of enhancing the game experience. Why do some people do that still? I'm totally cool with that, but it'd be really boring if I just said everyone should just do whatever they like and that's fine. So I'm gonna go out there and I'm gonna say, I think it's dumb. I think there's so many better options. When I play at the moment, at my friend's house, we bring a big monitor, we screw the back off it, we lie it flat on the table, and at the moment, I use PowerPoint to put the map on the monitor, because that's like the worst technological solution ever. I've even made little black areas, or little black shapes, which then I hide or send to the back. Is my big go-to command to reveal parts of the monitor, and then as the players sort of walk around the map, I move the map into different parts of the monitor to see it. And that's super fun. Obviously, if you use like Fantasy Grounds or something like that, you can get much more dynamic usefulness and a more practical Shadow of War and all that sort of thing with those. What I really want are maps with animated segments, and no one still has really done that yet. I want to be able to paint fire on the map and have it be animated fire, or paint a river across the map and have it flowing. One of the things I always do is I take the module, the Pathfinder module, and I either take the interactive maps, which are fantastic, where you can switch off the room numbers and the secret doors. Definitely edit out the secret doors. And I just save that.
Wait, we can edit those out?
You can, that's right. I open them in Photoshop and, you know, clone away the secret door. And then I just use that map as my digital map. It's absolutely fantastic and immersive and wonderful and beautiful. I don't like it, since we're having opinions. I don't like it when you can see the whole map all in one go. I think that sort of asks too much of the players to resist metagaming.
They're I like not. To take a flip mat and then take like the forest map pack or something similar and cover up parts of the map with, you know, the tiles from that with trees, and you know, when they get to a certain area, then I will take those trees off and they can see where the road goes. But just like in real life, if you're in a forested area and there's a road and it curves, you're not going to be able to see around that curve, right?
Yeah.
There's trees, there's brush. The other thing I like to do is I like to play with lighting in Photoshop on my maps to make maps for different types for different times of day. So I will have, like, you know, the village, and then I'll have the village at night, which has a lot less visibility, and, you know, I'll put little torches, you know, on, like, buildings so that you can sort of see around the front stoop.
Mm.
Just like, you know, if you walk up to a house at night, probably the doorway is going to be lit, or the windows are going to be lit, but you're not going to be able to see all the details. So.
Yeah, fantastic. Any comments? Just barge in, just like you did.
Oh.
That's the best way of doing it. The other thing I do when I play at home is I have our theater projector, which hangs from the roof and goes onto our big screen. And I just hang a mirror at 45 degrees in the middle of the room, over the table. The image bounces straight off the mirror and bounces straight down to the table. And that's super cool, which means I can have the map like this big. But what it also means is I laboriously cut out a whole lot of 1-inch blocks, and in blocks that were 2x1, and blocks that were 3x3. So you just put them down on the grid underneath the map, and you get three-dimensionality in your digital maps.
That's pretty cool.
Super cool.
The thing is, like, you don't just have to use. So, I work for Paizo.
Yeah.
I make money if you buy our flip mats. But even if I didn't work for Paizo, like, the flip mats are hands down my favorite product
definitely.
That we make.
Absolutely.
Just because they are so detailed and they're so gorgeous. And Jason Engel, the cartographer who does most of them, is really great about putting in, like, little wacky details.
Mm.
Like, you know,
he'll
put in, like, a rug that's missing a corner. So I use them even when there's not going to be any combat in a scene, just because it sets the mood and it makes people feel like they're in a place. And sometimes players get really attached to random little details in the map. Like, there was a couch in, I think, like, the bandit fortress that became my player's, like, talking couch, because the fortress they were using as their home base.
It's a really nice couch.
Well, it was like when they had to, like, sit down and have a party discussion, they're like, let's go to the room with the couch. And so they would sit down.
That's
on the
fantastic.
Couch.
Yeah, absolutely. The flip maps are a great place to start at, totally. Often when I'm designing an adventure, I will look on my shelf at the miniatures I own, and I'll look at the flip maps that I own and sort of put them together and go, oh, that's cool! An ogre who likes a couch.
I took my players to the opera because we had a theater map.
Yeah, the theater map's amazing. Amazing. And RPG map share, and yes, I'll answer that question in a sec, that's cool. RPG map share is a fantastic source of digital maps that you can use with all these solutions, and I'd highly recommend it. And one last comment about maps before I answer that is you can actually print these out at the local print shop. I have no idea what it's called, but it's actually much cheaper than you think it's going to be. But then definitely work out a way of covering up the bits. Yes.
So do you think an in-person painting projector is the better way to go over a television or monitor?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I think the 3D thing is just really hard.
Do you have any problems with lighting?
Yes. The lighting has to be lower in general than it would otherwise be.
You also get, when people are, you know, reaching in to move their minis, it's going to block details on the maps, and there's been times...
This is why we're here. Yeah, cool. So with TVs, watch out for parallax error. So if the image is far away from the very front of the glass of the TV, you can end up with quite a massive parallax error. So the mini, if you put the mini down perfectly lined up, then actually when you look at it from the side, it's almost in the next square. Also, obviously, look out for damaging a television. So yeah, we use an old monitor that's got a scratch.
None of those metal dice.
That's right. Yeah. Oh. And please do keep asking questions because they're going to be way more relevant when they're right near the thing.
Have you ever used Lego to actually build your rooms?
I haven't done that. That would be cool.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of work. It's a lot of prep work.
Yeah, that's right. I know, but we all just secretly love prep work. It's half of the game.
It's fun.
Cool. So yeah, I just reckon get into it. You know, it creates so much more immersion. Very real handouts and props. When I was playing with the red box, I used to take the piece of paper and I used to dip it in tea, mm-hmm. and then take it out and dry it off, and then cut around the edges and then char the edges with matches.
So my first job in games was as an alternate reality game designer, and ARGs are sort of like jamming an RPG for a million of your closest friends on the internet. And so there tend to be a lot of like clues. They tend to be kind of puzzle based and stuff. And so before I learned to use Photoshop, whenever we needed documents that looked like they were from 1912 or whatever, I would painstakingly create the real documents and then photograph them. So that was when I realized that like working in RPGs or theater or whatever prepares you for a career as a document forger.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah, totally. I just think there's nothing quite like being able to touch it as a player and to feel, and even especially with a handout, like, don't have the handout just still in the book. You know, at least photocopy the handout and just give it to the players and make the players read the content off the page. So for me, the roll your DC for knowledge check and then read out the dot points that they managed to get high enough to get to is immersion breaker. Exactly the same mechanic is absolutely fine, but you've got to try and deliver the information in a more organic, more realistic way.
And it's not that hard to like, even if you've photocopied a document, it's not that hard to like make it look old and a little crinkly. Like you paint it with tea, paint the edges,
crumple it up, flatten it back out again.
Yeah, and then bake it.
Yeah.
And it will also make your apartment smell like old book. So if you like that smell, it's great.
And for a completely different way of doing this, similar things, but I don't do a lot of prep. I don't do a lot of excess stuff. I don't make a lot of things. But I also believe that immersion is incredibly incredibly necessary. So in order for handouts, rather than, I don't photocopy. I don't go out and do, I don't make the things.
You don't make books?
But what I do is, I don't make books. But what I do is I make sure that, I know my group. We all have one of these. They're going to be at the table whether you want them there or not. And so what I do is we just all have a Slack channel.
Yeah.
And rather than handing out things or doing the DC and reading it to them, I send them a file on Slack and they look at it on their phone, and it's a much quicker and easier way to actually establish immersion as well.
Yeah.
This is a great way to control information, right?
Yeah.
How many of you were in the language panel I did with John Compton? Are you? Okay, good. This is new information then. One of the things that I like to do to make somebody who has put points into a particular language, to have that be more than like, this document's in Draconic, okay, you speak Draconic, this is what it says, right? Like, that's not terribly interesting, and it doesn't feel like that person speaks the language and everybody else at the table doesn't, right? So a lot of times I will text them the translation of the language so that they know it and they can decide how to explain it to everybody else and they can decide how much information to give them. I also like to do things where even if somebody has taken a language, like very few of us speak second or third languages as well as we speak our first, right?
That's right.
Your native tongue, I learned this when I was in a car accident and got a concussion, your native language is stored in a different part of your brain than languages you learn later. Fortunately, I hit my head on the languages you learn later side, because that could have been really bad than wherever else. But one of the things I'll do is I will still have people roll a linguistics check for a language that isn't their first language, and if it's their if they roll under a 10, I will run whatever the document says through Google Translate, through like Arabic and Chinese and Finnish and, you know, something else, and then give them back kind of the, you know, because I mean, even when you do that, there's still some of the original meaning that you can get. Like Google Translate is good enough these days that it's not complete gobbledygook, but it's not whatever
that's
it originally
fantastic.
Said. Versus if they roll like a 10 to 15, it'll only run it through one other language, so it's still the same, but if they roll 15 or up, they just get the exact translation. Similarly, if you have something where it's an ancient language or something that they're having to translate, just making like a simple substitution cipher that your party, because then everybody can participate in trying to decipher it.
I have a story about that, which is really cool. I had a character that the NPC was speaking common, but spoke it very badly. So I practiced the whole day doing that speech where you don't, what was it? You don't use the letter E. You're not allowed to use the letter E. You must talk thing with not, alpha. Yeah, okay. And so you have to, it actually makes you speak stilted. Lee, and yeah, except that was wrong, but yes, okay. And I practiced and practiced and practiced and practiced. I got three sentences in, and the cleric cast Comprehend Languages. Like one of the best gaming moments. And so then the NPC is, wow, this feels really unusual, being able to speak absolutely normally. So funny. Oh, it was very, very funny. So yes, that's right. Yes.
You guys ever use props specific to the player's characters to get them immersed into their character lines at the table?
I mean, in general, I don't like to I don't like it to interfere as the GM with somebody's character creation, which is why like I don't tell people how they react. Right? I will tell them like, you hear this, but I'm not gonna tell them how they feel about it or anything like that. Mm. Even for sense motive, I try and be like, it seems like this person is feeling this, but not like, and you think that. But I do like, so, you know, it's largely on them if they want to have props for their character, but I will, like, if their character has a backstory where they have, you know, parents who try and keep in touch with them while they're adventuring, like, I will write them letters from their parents.
Yeah, that's cool.
And hand those out to them, so.
One other, sorry, you go.
Well, and specifically, as the lazy GM, that is an
good.
Excellent way to offload work onto the player. You say, oh, hey, you should make that. You know, you have this very important piece of your character. See if you can make that, you know, and put it back on the player, because then they're utilizing their, you know, the right side of their brain to actually make things and think about their character, and they get themselves more tied into the character.
That's right.
By making it themselves.
Definitely.
And, you know, I get out of work.
That's right.
Sneaky bastard.
I promised cheap and expensive options. The cheap options that I originally used for treasure was plastic pirate coins, spray painted. They were gold, so I spray painted silver ones and copper ones. And so actually all the treasure the players had was literal treasure. So at the end of encounter, I would just tip it out onto the table and they can work it out. I added some gems that were like, you know, 100 gold piece gems, and other gems are 1,000 gold piece. So actually they turn up to every game, you know, like as in flower arranging plastic gems with their bag of treasure, and they want to buy something. I can actually, you know how you never bother with the one copper piece? Oh yeah, I'll be a copper piece, thank you. You know, and they're like, whatever, you know. But I, like I put out my hand and they have to fish. Well, I've only got a silver piece, that'll be enough, you know. And so that's really cool. Obviously, campaigncoins.com, you can spend lots of money for amazing,
and they're beautiful.
Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous coins. Also an Australian company, so booyah.
Do you ever have a player lose their bag of loot?
Well, you know, wouldn't that be tragic? It's never happened yet, funnily enough.
Would you work in the story?
Yeah, absolutely. certainly wouldn't just reproduce it. they might be able to seek it out again, but it'd be they'd pay for it. That'd be cool. Oh, I hope they do lose one now. And I definitely recommend that. That's because gold is so the gold thing. I mean, you love writing it down on your character sheet, but to have it in the weight of it and the heft.
So now that the idea is in your head, are you going to contemplate like
literally stealing it? Totally. you didn't leave it at my house. You took it. I remember.
Doesn't
Doesn't that kind of get untenable at levels where they're like, I got 5,000 gold coins?
So you, so you just have a 1,000 gold piece gem.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so that I have see-through cheap plastic ones, which are 100, and then these black stones, which are really heavy, which are the 1,000 ones. Yeah, yeah, that occurred to me very quickly. Was like, oh, hang on, no. Do I have 5,000
copper pieces?
Let's go into
the vault.
That's right. Rob
Banks. Oh, you lost it.
Excellent, cool. And do, we'll have time for questions at the end. Oh, yeah, we're doing all right. Smells. Yeah, sorry, yeah.
Sorry, what was the more expensive option?
Yeah, the campaign coins.
What's it called?
Campaigncoins.com. They're, like, they're amazing. They'll be at Gen Con. Or you can obviously post it. I don't know how they, yeah. But they're really, really, really
and
gorgeous.
And they're available on Paizo.com.
Oh, are they? Aha! Brilliant.
Product placement.
Yeah.
Sales guy.
They're incredible. Amazing. And so come up with your currency system and your way of getting your tens and your hundreds, and then you won't need, because if you think about the maths, you'll only need for four players something like 26 gold pieces, because then as soon as, you know, two of the players have 10, you can actually replace them with the 10 gold piece, platinum piece thing, you know, and then you only need sort of, you know, 26 of those, and then you can go up to the next denomination if you do a little bit of working out. Fantastic. Smells. So, yeah, you can bring a bunch of flowers to the table or have it in the other room and bring it in at the right time. Raid the garage.
Smell, you know,
yeah, smell is huge.
So powerful.
Hugely powerful.
I saw, have any of you ever seen the Cirque du Soleil production of Corteo? Okay. So, it came to Redmond and I went with a bunch of friends and they had this... this act where a bunch of aerialists were performing on this like swinging chandelier, and I could see that the lights, the candles in the chandelier were electric candles, right? And yet my brain kept telling me that the flame was real, and I didn't know why. And then a little bit later, they had this act where it was, you know, like a acrobat that balanced on top of a ball, and it was a beach ball. And so they had the sounds of the ocean, but like, my brain was really convinced that we were actually at the beach, and I couldn't figure out why. And then, I don't know what it was that made me realize it. I realized they were pumping the scent of sunscreen.
You're
into
like,
the
hang
tent
on one,
when
two,
they were at the beach, and at the chandelier thing, they'd been pumping the scent of melted wax in. And so, like, it's amazing how much that can activate, like, the emotional and the memories.
Yeah.
There's a reason why Disneyland pumps the smell of baking cookies into Main Street.
Oh yeah, my parents
they actually aren't baking cookies.
Oh yeah, my parents are realtors. And back in the day when they would sell houses, they would turn on the oven and put a few drops of vanilla in the oven, and it makes it smell homey.
Totally.
Box of crayons in the kids' room.
I'm also thinking maybe open can of paint. Handful of sort of rotting dirt. You know, damp leaves. Moistened cloth. Old underpants, I suppose, you know? So yeah, absolutely. You've got to make sure, obviously, none of your players have terrible allergies to something, or, you know. But yeah, you could, if you, you
or,
know.
Yeah, you have to be careful. Like, one of my friends worked in a morgue for a while, and so you get a choice when you work in a morgue as to whether you want to put the peppermint-scented stuff under your nose or the lavender-scented stuff, because and you have to choose carefully, because whichever of those scents you choose, you're going to hate for the rest of your life. It's going to make it smell like death to you. So, like, one time I, you know, my players were going to go meet this fey queen, and so, you know, I had a bunch of, like, flower scents, and one of them was lavender. And she was like, why does it smell like corpses?
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, so literally, with all these immersion things, in fact, do check with triggers, yeah? So, and that same goes if you're going to, if the players are going to find a murdered, raped child or something like that. You really have to make sure. Like,
you don't
want to
do those sets.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you know, you don't.
Know your triggers.
So that's the cheap option, obviously. There is also an expensive option. Does everyone know about adventure scents?
Yes.
No.
Amazing. A little can, which is secure and tight, and then all you have to do is just have screw the lid off and open it, and then the aroma will then waft around the room, and they've got everything from.
What's it called?
Adventure scents, as in. S-C-E-N-T, and it's a pun, obviously, for adventures. Yeah.
Are they reusable or single use?
They're reusable, so they're aroma-infused plastic beads.
Gotcha.
And so you just open the can for a while, and then when you want it to go away, you have to close it, obviously. It takes a while for aromas to go away, so this was a bit of an issue.
Yeah.
So they have dusty, smoky smells, they have healing temples, they have fishy docks, they have everything slightly...
burn incense. If you ever have somebody going to a temple, just light some incense.
Yeah,
that's
right. So yeah, really, and they're a wonderful company, really fantastic. One of the best Kickstarter videos I've ever seen. Very, very funny.
I watched that.
Slightly mad gnome who was, excellent. Any other ideas around scent? No? Cool. Mood lighting. Everyone's doing this, right? Mm. Have to do mood lighting.
Oh, so they're a little pricey, but for $60, there's a company called Misfit, and they do these Bluetooth-enabled LED light bulbs that have different, and you can control them from your phone or your iPad, and they have, in addition to like being able to be pretty much any color that you want, they also have these like shifting patterns, so like you have like a sun-dappled day, which is like this warm blue that kind of shifts in and out, like clouds are going over it. You have a sunset where it starts out really like bright yellow, and like over the course of like 15 minutes cools down into like this dark red and then dims. You have like the forest one, which has sort of this dappling effect with like green and little bits of like yellow and stuff, and so those are great.
What was that?
The company's called Misfit, and I forget what the brand name of the bulb itself is. But
and then there's Philips.
Home Depot and Lowe's carry various LED.
Yeah, do you have Philips Hue
color
lighting?
Yeah.
Philips Hue. Hue.
See, those would be on the expensive side.
There's the whole house system. That's right. Yeah, I didn't know there was a cheaper option. That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
I learned something.
IKEA has, like, for $20, a little LED track lights. And you stick into things, and
it's a dial.
It's got a dial, and it goes through the colors, and you can set it to slowly change, or you can set the exact color, and it's $20.
Mm.
Could you get one of the cheap projectors and just aim at your ceiling?
Yes, absolutely. And then you can run video of
anything
of sort of blackness with flashing whites every now and then. Would be really, really cool.
Yeah.
In fact, there's something we want to do in Sirenscape, but we probably will do. Is have the sound sets also send the cues to a hue lighting system or something, so that when you hit a fireball one shot, it sends full red, you know, for 3 seconds, and then goes back off again, and when the thunderstorm's going and it's just generally dark blues and stuff like that, and when an element decides to play a lightning strike, it goes flash with white.
Oh,
that
yeah.
is really cool. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
The one I was talking about is called the Misfit Bolt. And it also, the program will interface.
Does it do multiple globes simultaneously?
Yeah.
Okay,
and you
cool.
can control each globe separately if you want to, and it also will like coordinate if you want to hook it up to like iTunes. They'll actually like a little bit like a visualizer and has different patterns.
Yeah, that's right. Which you could do with Sirenscape as well. Yeah, that's cool. So that's the expensive option, obviously. At least have low lighting in the general room you're in. You know, if you have anything distracting in the house, like other elements in the room, make sure they're dark. So keep the lighting restricted to the table, whether you need a couple of lamps or just one of the overhead lights shining down on the table. That's fantastic. Obviously, people need to be able to read. They need to be able to read their character sheets. Is also really, really important. So you can have, because that takes away from immersion, because everyone's going, I can't read me, whatever. In a peculiar English accent, obviously. I'm sure that's how you're like. So you could run by candlelight only on the table, but then people could use little book lamps to read their character sheets. Whatever you can do to evoke, this is all about immersion. And all these things are triggering things that happen automatically and not consciously. So the smell, you know, instantly, straight through to memories and associations. Those memories can be of comfort and warmth and positivity, or they can be of discomfort and nerves. Obviously, the same with the lighting. If the lighting's low and you're trying to create sort of feeling of danger, then that's really going to do that straight away. If you want to then lift the level of the room up to beautiful yellow, warm light, because they enter the temple of healing, then everyone's going to relax and be happy. And then as they realize it's actually a Rasmerian temple and they don't actually cast divine spells, and you've got the Sirenscape sound set with Jason Bullman just crapping on like nothing else, just gradually change the lighting level from bright yellow all the way back down to darkness or to red or something, and then combat occurs. And all these things are involuntary reactions, so you're eliciting responses in the people, in the players' bodies. And that will give you an amazing, they'll come away from that game knowing that it was incredible, it was exciting, it was thrilling, it was viscerally engaging, and that's what you really, really want. And you're basically taking load, you're taking load off you as a GM. Your words are a very powerful tool, obviously, and your descriptive power, your ability to not say three times in a sentence. You know, if that's your issue, practice. But, you know, why not also have the power of smell and lighting and sound and everything playing on your team? Questions? Yes?
So, if you're going to like a global game shop to host a game, how is it that you create immersion in that sort of sense?
In a game shop?
Yeah, like you don't have control over the lighting, or maybe you're not able to burn it in that. So, what are some things that you do to create immersion in that sort of sense?
Yeah, so I mean, everything has a game shop solution. So for Sirenscape, for instance, rather than having it going out my HDMI cable into a surround system that's filling the entire place with sound, though I probably would do that anyway, then you have a Bluetooth speaker, or three, in fact, you know, poking outwards from the center of the table. Because as sound emanates out, it gets half as loud every time the distance is doubled. So if the speaker is only that far away from the listener, it doesn't really need to be that loud to be loud enough for the players. I mean, lighting, I guess you ask for a corner or something and, you know, smash out the LED or something. I reckon you could probably do aroma, happily enough. I think you'd negotiate with your gaming store. Maps are not a problem at all. And in fact, really, gaming stores should be having demos of these games that are intense and immersive and amazing, including awesome maps with we didn't mention dungeon dressing icons and things like Morgan selling in the store barrels and tables and altars and chests and really great looking minis.
If you go to, so one trick that Owen Casey Stevens, one of our developers, taught me is that aquarium stuff, you can get a lot of like little trees and treasure chests and stuff, and they're way cheaper than the ones that are designed for gamers because you're going to put a fish are going to pee on them.
Fairy garden stuff on Amazon.
Yeah, fairy garden
stuff. Fairy garden. And then it's also
scaled housewives.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then also for some reason, wargaming table dressing is way cheaper than RPG table dressing. There's some kind of weird marketing, I don't know, they think we're easy marks or something, because the same stuff for wargaming, you can get all sorts of barrels and half walls and all kinds of stuff to make your map more 3D and more interesting, and it's way cheaper. It's like a buck for eight barrels.
That's cool.
Anyway, so there's something going on, they're charging us too much.
That's right, yes. Well, gamers go, oh my god, it's amazing, it's better.
I know.
Yes, you worked that out.
It's like a single tiny barrel for only $4.
That's right.
Oh my god.
Cool. Excellent. So that's my ideas that aren't sound. Obviously, sound is my passion. So yeah, we can talk a little bit about Sirenscape if you like. So who's using it at the table already? Excellent. Fantastic. And has it been effective? I thought, so were you more interested in knowing about how to manage Sirenscape during the game, or are you more interested in the whys and wherefores? So who wants to know, who would like me to give a demo of what I would do in a game to contour that immersion? Okay, yeah, and who would like to just know about sort of the theory of sound and why it works viscerally and all that sort of stuff? Okay, so it's still more on the first one. Okay, cool.
I have a third question.
Yes. And then a Q&A, which we should make sure we get to, yeah.
How does all of this affect gameplay when the GM has to be doing all this other
stuff? Okay, that's a great question. Perfect question, yeah. So once again, hand off work.
Well, the key is preparation in all things. And the idea is you have your tools ready and you know what you're going to do and you know when you're going to use them. So it's not...
Yeah, it's really important.
You just have it there and you're just like, all right, well... Sorry, you move, you miss, and you just make the sound.
The other thing you can do is you can have a player who helps you co-GM.
Yeah,
I agree. You can ask a player, you can have a player manage a lot of stuff at Sirenscape, but you can have the iPad or whatever between you, so if there's something you don't want to tell them is going to happen, you can reach out and do the sign of that for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. I think it'll just be through this little speaker, but I'll give you a little bit of a demo, and you can watch what I do. Yeah, and I can't emphasize enough, actually, that and I remember saying this last year, and I listened to it just this morning, that we're playing a social game. Yeah, it's about getting together with your friends and looking at each other and having fun and laughing together. It's not actually about necessarily even telling the best story you could possibly tell. So if any of these things gets in the way of one of your players' experiences, then just change what you're doing and modify it so it's fine, or get rid of it, like totally. It's just a game, and it should be really fun and really, really social. And that's actually pretty much why I made Sirenscape, is because when I wanted to add sound and music to the gaming table, I looked at my options, and two things happened. One is I found tools that took way too much of my attention away from the players, and made me messing around with playlists and playing the wrong thing and having to go around and change windows and all this sort of thing, and that takes away from gameplay. So I wanted something that was just pretty much one touch and leave. Really, really, really important. And the other thing I found is that the music just wasn't right. So the Lord of the Rings soundtrack is kind of cool, but for various technical reasons, it's really, really strongly associated with various characters and various scenes. And if we're trying to immerse our players in a particular scene, going dum da 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 da, you know, I'm thinking. That's right. Yeah. That's what we talked about. And if you want to hear all that stuff that I've mentioned that we're not going to get to, listen to last year's podcast on the No Direction website. So search for the same name, PaizoCon 2016, and you'll hear us talk all about leitmotifs and harmony and character associations and all that sort of stuff, and you'll get the other half of the talk, which we haven't done.
Yes, what a great idea. Thank you, Ryan. We love you.
Great. So, to use Sirenscape, someone give me... how much of content have I got loaded here? A reasonable amount. And have I got a network? No. Okay, so someone give me a location.
Farm.
A farm. Excellent. Good. And I'll just meanwhile try and connect to the network. So I just go farm, and there it is. Pink, and that's it. And I say, so you're on the farm. Sirenscape will just instantly crossfade, and there you go. And the whole point of Sirenscape is that's the last interaction I need to have with it for like, you know, an hour and a half of role playing with the cow who talks. Oh, magical cow!
Oh, Daisy, what secrets do you hide?
And yeah, as I said, there's also the technical stuff we can talk about, why it works so beautifully and why it's so non-repetitive. But I'll just show you this, let's do this sheep here. So this is a time-down counter. Every time it runs out, it picks a random sample, puts it in a random direction, at a random distance, applies the dynamic of the environment, the reverb of the environment dynamically. So if the sheep is far away in the cathedral, it will be really, really echoey. And if it's really, really close, it'll be louder and less echoey, and it plays that sample. It then picks a random time according to the parameters, which are set either by you guys when you build the sound set in the creator or by me in the creator, and then waits that random time. See, this sheep is actually taking quite a lot longer to come back again. And that's just one element. And it just does that on and on and on and on with the, say, 5 to 20 different sheep samples there are. And it's doing that for the crows, it's doing that for the horses, it's doing that for the insect flybys. So some of these events are quite remarkable, like there's a swarm of bees that happen just every now and then, maybe once every 20 minutes or something. It might fly close, maybe it flies far away. And most of the sound sets have a little bit of music that maybe plays. So say there's a bard at the farm, I'll leave the farmland going, and I'll just hit play here on this music. Oh, there he is. So it'll just, once again, it'll play, there it is, it'll just play a song every now and then. This track is actually designed to leave a massive big pause in between each song. So rather than just music, it does that. If you want it a bit softer, you just turn him down. If you want to trigger a cow, because it's magical. Yay! Magical talking cow! And there's also a version of the music element here with no pauses in the track, so it doesn't wait to start and it doesn't stop between them. Fantastic, I'm now going to fireball the cow. Excellent! Oh. Okay, right, what creature attacks?
A mind flayer.
I think we go horror elements. There we are, elements horror. Fantastic. So we're probably, this is one we'd want to plan for. Oh, that's not a horror element. Have I got it show? Oh, here we are, elements horror. Right, this is really cool. We have all these sort of horror general, and you're not going to be able to hear a lot of these, bloody rain, undead flesh. It's an evil farm. Can you hear that?
My cow is a mimic.
Oh, these are called the drum hits.
Damn it, Daisy.
I trusted you.
Okay, so say I knew that was going to happen, and that's going to be my combat setup for the Mind Flayer, because it's like brain. I go back to the farm, and I go. The bard's still trying to go in the background, it's so funny. Mind Flayer on holiday. Right.
This is an official sound. That's set, right. Please.
So right, so there's my. So we're back on the farm now with that mood, which is one of the preset ones that comes along. I've actually turned off the bard, and then when the Mind Flayer is ready to track, all you do is just reach down and you go boom and you touch that, and then you don't do anything. You just say roll for initiative, suckers. They're like, what? The lighting's just dropped. The sound started. They're like, no, I just had to go home and become a florist. Excellent. Give me another location.
Tavern.
Yeah, we've got lots of taverns. We've got three taverns. So once again, you can have a friendly tavern, a drinking time. Just crossfades into friendly tavern. I wish we had this booming over the speakers. It would be so nice. But yeah, the sound of just people chatting. Once again, there's a mead glass element here, which just has occasional clunks and things. Some of these things hardly happen at all. See these coins and other stuff? It's not going to actually start for ages and ages and ages. If they go over into the quiet corner, I just hit quiet corner, and now actually the sound's almost completely gone. A lot of the sounds in Sirenscape are very, very backgroundy, very subliminal, especially the stuff in the dungeon. Has everyone seen the Jason Bulman Razzmir Priest?
No.
It's like the best thing in the world. So it's something new we've been doing, as in new, like 18 months ago. We've got three sound sets from Matt Mercer. Which are amazing,
what?
But this one from some of his NPCs from Critical Role, it's amazing. The idea with this Bulman one is you turn up at the temple.
The house of the living God is open to you.
Can you hear what he's saying? Is that loud enough? Yeah. And you say, oh, thank you.
All hail the living God. All hail the living God.
Okay, yeah, but we really want.
All hail the living God.
Thank you, excellent.
Why has your path led you to the living God?
Well, actually,
this is what every meeting with Jason is.
That's right. What we actually wanted was some healing.
Services are only for the faithful, but you might be able to receive a blessing with the time.
Okay, yeah. So, but you can definitely do healing, right?
The miracles of Razzmir are available only to those who believe in the living God.
But
if you're unable to donate to the living God, I cannot see that he will take the time to give you this blessing.
Okay. We'll give you a tithe. How about 100 gold pieces?
If you cannot give of yourself, how can you expect the living God to give to you?
A 1,000 gold pieces then?
Of course.
Okay. Here you go. Right. Can you give us healing now?
I am afraid you are not worthy for Razzmir's blessing.
But...
Yes.
Can you actually do healing?
Blasphemous!
You can't do healing at all, can you?
Such blasphemy will not be tolerated here.
Listen, you're having us on!
Like three! Restrain these fools!
Okay, and then it can turn into a battle with Jason Bulman, which is always the best thing. So that's about as active as you get when you're running the game. And the idea of these NPC sound sets is that you can respond to anything the PCs say, including that computer game response in those text adventures where it has to say, I don't know what you're saying, which is this.
I concern myself only with the will of Razzmir, not such trivialities.
Yeah, and once again, there's multiples of those within each sound set. But in general, you're just going to be touching a sound every now and then and setting it off. Any questions before we run out of time, which we have already done, strictly speaking?
I kind of have one. So you say, you know, it's good to avoid recognizable songs, which I usually agree with.
Yes.
Do you think
and
there's
lyrics.
A place for those recognizable songs or worded songs or even like really well-known songs like pop songs?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and in fact, so listen to last year's talk about leitmotifs. Associating a particular song or a moment or a short segment of a song with a particular NPC every time they come in, or say if we talk about James Bond, every time he does something really, really cool, it goes and it stops.
It's a game, it's fun, and
yeah.
Like pop songs are really good as kind of a punchline.
Yeah.
In one of my games, I was playing a whip fighter, and so like the first time we went into battle, Lisa started playing the Whippet song.
Yeah. So. Has it lay whip or whip it good?
So the totally. Whip it good one.
Yeah, so I'd encourage that because it is fun. Remember this, we're not like deadly serious about immersion. Yes.
How well does the system work with the surround sound system?
I put really, really amazingly. So HDMI out to surround, it's in 7.1. Yeah.
7.1, okay.
And I literally have had the moment, probably my favorite gaming moment ever, which is when the party looked down the hole in Haunting of Harrowstone. You know, you come in on the ground level and there's level down, and they look down and they're not meant to go there yet because you kind of get killed unless you go upstairs. So I just triggered this massive deep roar and it kind of came from over there and echoed from over there. And that's where that line comes from, which I've used already today, which I use all the time, is we go home and decide to be florists. it's very, very amazing. It's just, I love it. So it was Nathan, who was just incredible. So yeah, the sounds will appear all around the surround spectrum. More questions? Who has some masks? Does anyone have masks? You had one. I need a photo of the masks. Yeah, excellent, good. Okay, I'm gonna take a couple of photos. Can you guys sit normally? You guys sit normally. So sit back, normally as if it's just a perfect, and then hold the mask up, yeah. Oh my God, that's so freaky.
Yeah, so
That's the tavern keep, yeah, which is really great as well. Any last questions, just super quickly? No, good. We've been perfectly clear. Obviously, you can grab me out in the hall and pick my brains, give me ideas. Yeah. But thank you everyone for coming. It was really lovely to see you all.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluter and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad. To find more great Pathfinder audio, go to NoDirectionPodcast.com.